So if you're listening to this, imagine trying to fund an independent movie or a self-released album today.
Right, which is usually just an incredibly painful
Oh,
process.
totally. I mean, you basically have two choices, right? You either max out like 10 different credit cards and beg your family for cash.
Hoping you have enough to just rent a decent camera for a weekend.
Exactly. Or you go to the traditional gatekeepers, the major studios or the big record labels.
And you basically just sign away your creative soul.
Yeah, your intellectual property, your control, all of it. But today we're looking at something different. We have a confidential investor pitch deck that proves there's actually a third option.
And it's a fascinating one. It's this hyper-structured, almost mathematical blueprint.
Right. It basically borrows the ruthless efficiency of like Silicon Valley venture capital and applies it directly to the underground creator culture.
Which is a profound shift, to be honest. I mean, historically, the world of high-stakes finance, with its cap tables and aggressive risk mitigation and, strict legal compliance,
It does not speak the same language as an artist.
at all. They don't speak the same language as a passionate artist who's just trying to capture a specific vibe on film.
But when those two worlds actually do collide, you get something that looks like the project we are deep diving into today.
Yeah, and it's quite the project.
It is. The project is called EVLVEE. And our mission for you today on this deep dive is to deconstruct this confidential deck. We're not just looking at it as a pitch for a piece of art, but we want to really understand the mechanics of how it functions as a financial asset.
Because it really is engineered like one.
Okay, let's unpack this. What EVLV actually is, on a tangible level, is a 12 to 15 minute cinematic film, but it's intertwined with a 10 to 12 track original music album.
Right, but they aren't like releasing a film and then just dropping a soundtrack a month later.
No, not at all. It is engineered as a single, fully integrated visual album.
And to understand why this specific media asset is structured with such financial rigor, you really have to look closely at the person who's building it.
Yeah, the operator behind EVLV isn't your typical, art school graduate who is just sort of figuring out how a production set works.
Far from it, actually.
The mind behind this is Kyle Prater, the founder of Chasing Greatness Productions. And his background is completely unexpected.
Yeah, it really is.
He is a former NFL wide receiver who actually transitioned out of professional sports and became an award-winning filmmaker and recording artist.
Which, I mean, that's a fascinating pivot in itself. But what really stands out to capital partners isn't just the novelty of, an athlete turning to the arts.
Right.
It's the rigorous professional track record he's built over the last decade. In the venture capital world, there is a massive emphasis on what we call operator-led capital.
Okay, wait, let's pause on that term for a
Okay.
second. Because for someone listening who might not be in VC, what makes an operator different from just, any other founder or creator pitching a cool idea?
That's a great question. So, an operator is someone who has actually been in the trenches building complex projects from the ground up.
Like actually doing the work.
Exactly. They don't just have a vision, they have a proven history of managing teams, balancing budgets, hitting deadlines, and navigating distribution.
Which is huge in the film world.
It's everything. When investors look at early stage creative bets, their absolute number one fear is execution risk.
Yeah.
They look at an indie film pitch and think, will this even get finished? Are they going to run out of money in post-production? Is the final product going to look incredibly cheap?
So it's exactly like a tech founder walking into a pitch meeting.
Completely.
If you walk in with just like an idea scribbled on a napkin, you get laughed out of the room. But if you walk in showing actual beta users a working prototype, early revenue.
The conversation changes entirely.
Right. And Prater isn't asking for a handout to go find his voice. He's already directed major brand campaigns for Nike.
Yep.
He's worked with LeBron James's Uninterrupted platform. And he isn't just, submitting his work to local community theater contests.
No, he is taking home tier one international wins,
Yeah, places like the Rome Film Awards.
which signals to those investors that the product will be delivered and crucially, it will be premium. He has basically already conquered the execution risk that normally kills these kinds of deals.
But I feel like that brings us to the core tension of this entire deep dive.
Okay, how so?
Well, having a great resume and the ability to shoot a beautiful film is one thing. Actually, finding the hundreds of thousands of dollars needed to fund a high production value film and a full-length studio album, without handing over your master recordings to a massive label.
Right. That is a completely different beast.
It really is. So how exactly does an independent creator raise real capital while keeping their ownership completely intact?
And that is where we see the absolute brilliance of this deck. They use a hybrid capital structure.
Okay, let's break that down, because the total capital raise that are asking for to fund Evol DAE is $250,000.
Correct.
But instead of just, you know, passing a hat around to rich friends, they take that $250K and cleanly divide it right down the middle. They have a $125,000 investor lane and a $125,000 sponsor lane.
Yes.
But wait, why split it? Like, why create two completely different legal and operational lanes? I mean, if you have access to wealthy networks, why not just get one rich angel investor to write a single $250,000 check and just be done with it? Doesn't managing two types of money just overcomplicate the logistics?
You'd think so, but what's fascinating here is how this split actually solves two massive logistical nightmares for independent production.
Okay, what are you?
Timing and leverage. Let's look at the speed of the money first.
Right.
Sponsorship dollars, which come from corporate marketing budgets, operate on a fairly quick, like 30 to 60 day cycle.
Because brands just want to deploy their ad spend.
Exactly. Accredited investor deals, however, they require intensive legal compliance, heavy due diligence, and contract negotiations.
Right. The lawyers get involved.
And that can easily drag out to 120 days or more. So by splitting the raise, Prater can lock in that corporate sponsor money fast, fund his pre-production, and actually get cameras rolling while the investor lane is still, you know, finalizing its paperwork.
Oh, that makes total sense. Production doesn't just stall for 3 months because two lawyers are arguing over a comma in an operating agreement.
Exactly.
The brand money basically acts as an early ignition switch.
Precisely. But the second, and I think arguably more brilliant mechanism here, is how this split alters the risk profile for the financial investor.
Okay, explain that.
So that $125,000 coming from the sponsor lane, it does not sit inside the financial recoupment waterfall.
Meaning those brands aren't asking for a percentage of the profits. They don't even expect their money back.
Not at all. Sponsors are buying audience attention and cultural association. They aren't looking for a financial dividend.
Okay.
So think about the leverage this creates for the people in the investor lane.
All right.
For every single dollar a financial investor puts into this project, there are actually $2 of production value actively working on the screen.
Wait, that is wild to think about.
Right.
So you invest, say, 50 grand, but you own a profit share in a project that was built with 100 grand. You get double the production quality, double the marketing potential, but you only have to pay back half the money before the project turns a profit.
Exactly. It fundamentally dilutes the risk without diluting the profit pool. It is just an incredibly clean cap table.
Okay. Well, since we are talking about profit pools, let's follow the money. Let's dig into that $125,000 investor lane, because the mechanics here are crucial.
They really are.
Honestly, I'm looking at this deck right now and I need you to translate a bit of it for me.
Sure. Let's do it.
If I am an investor and I write a check for $25,000, how does this actually pay out? Is there like a strict hierarchy to who gets paid when?
There is, and it's built on a very rigid four-step financial waterfall.
Okay, a waterfall.
Yeah, which is a mechanism borrowed directly from commercial real estate and private equity. So, step one, you, the investor, are in the first out position.
Meaning what?
This means 100% of your initial capital must be returned before the creator or the production company sees a single dime of net profit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Every dollar of revenue that comes through the door goes straight to paying back that original $125,000 pool.
Which is a massive signal of confidence from the operator, honestly. Like, he isn't paying himself some bloated producer fee up front. He only eats if the investor eats first.
Exactly.
So what is step two?
Step two is where they issue a defined preferred return. In the Evol V deck, it's structured at an 8% annualized hurdle rate.
Hold on. Let's pause on 8% preferred return.
Okay.
Because for those of us who don't spend our weekends reading private equity terms, what does that actually mean for you, the listener, if you're the investor, in plain English?
It means the project legally owes you an 8% interest rate on your money for the time it was tied up in production.
Okay.
And you get paid that interest before any of the actual profit sharing begins.
So it treats your investment almost like a loan.
Basically, yeah. A loan with a guaranteed interest rate at the front end, which gives you a baseline yield just for participating.
That's super safe.
Right. And only after your initial capital is returned, plus that 8% cash return, do we finally reach step three.
Which is the actual profit split.
Exactly.
And I noticed that it's very simple here. It's just a 50-50 net profit split between the investor pool and the operator.
Yep.
There are no confusing compounding tiers where, you know, the creator suddenly takes 80% if it hits a certain benchmark. It's just a clean cut down the middle for the life of the asset.
And that transparency manages expectations perfectly. But, you know, the obvious next question an investor should ask is, where's that revenue actually coming from?
Right.
Because a waterfall is completely useless if there is no water flowing into it.
Right. And they outline five interlocking revenue streams in this deck.
Yes.
So you have streaming royalties from Spotify and Apple Music. You have sync licensing, which is basically getting the music placed in TV shows or commercials.
Yep.
You have film licensing to streaming video platforms. You have brand partnerships. And finally, experiential revenue from live events and premieres.
Right, the five pillars.
Now, I have to challenge this because I am looking at their base case projections here.
Okay, let's hear it.
They estimate that if they hit a couple of solid sync placements and, like, a festival pickup, this project will generate $1.5 million in gross revenue off of a $250,000 budget.
Which sounds high.
It sounds incredibly optimistic. I mean, how are they expecting to generate $1.5 million without relying on some massive viral miracle?
And that is a very fair critique. I mean, independent film is absolutely notorious for inflated projections.
Oh, yeah.
But the defense for these specific numbers lies in how they have engineered the asset from day one to be multi-channel.
What do you mean by that?
Well, most indie projects, they finish filming and then they spend a year trying to figure out how to sell the final cut to a single distributor, like a Netflix or an A24.
Right.
And if Netflix passes, the investors just lose everything. It's a binary outcome.
Hit or miss.
Exactly. But Evolve VE is different. The deck explicitly states the music is produced with clean instrumental stems and the film is edited in modular sync-ready sections.
Oh, I see. So the trade-off there is they aren't just waiting for one big savior to buy the whole thing.
Right.
If a sports network needs, like, a high-energy 15-second music clip for a halftime montage, Evolve VE already has the isolated track ready to license.
Precisely. No single revenue stream carries the burden of the recoupment all by itself.
That's really smart.
It is. If the Spotify streaming numbers are modest, well, a single $50,000 sync placement in a video game trailer can still make the investors whole. They have basically built an ecosystem of microtransactions rather than praying for one macro sale.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Let's talk about the timeline of those transactions.
Okay.
The deck targets a 12 to 24-month window to get the investors their capital back.
Right.
But if you know anything about the music industry, you know that streaming royalties often lag by, like, 6 to 9 months.
Oh, easily.
Licensing checks can take forever to clear processing. So how does an independent crew survive that gap? Like, how do you pay your editors, host your premieres, and market the project while you waiting half a year for a check from Spotify?
And this brings us right back to the genius of the five-stream ecosystem.
Okay.
The long-tail revenue, you know, the streaming and the licensing, that is incredibly slow.
Mm.
But the experiential money and the brand partnership money, that pays up front.
Oh, it's like getting paid to build a billboard by the companies who want to advertise on it before the highway's even finished.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, that upfront brand cash covers the concrete in this deal of the marketing and the live events. So the financial investors don't have to sweat the construction delays, so to speak, while they wait for the long-tail royalties to trickle in.
Exactly. It creates vital early cash flow. Now, to assure the investors that these royalties will actually make it to their bank accounts, the deck relies on some heavy administrative machinery.
Like what?
They utilize Acama and file under Reg D506B compliance.
Okay, step right there. You just dropped CAMA and Reg D506B.
Ah, right. Sorry.
Let's translate this. I know Reg D generally means this is a highly regulated offering restricted to accredited investors, ensuring the whole thing is, you know, legally above board with the SEC.
Yes.
But what is Acama and how does it protect the person writing the check?
Right. So Acama stands for Collection Account Management Agreement.
Okay.
Think of it as an impartial digital lockbox managed by a completely neutral third party.
Oh, interesting.
When Spotify or a television network pays Evolve VE for a song, the money does not go into Kyle Prater's personal bank account. Oh, that's a huge distinction.
It is. It goes directly into the Camalock box. The software inside that lockbox reads the financial waterfall we discussed earlier. It automatically slices the pie, and it routes the investor's initial capital and that 8% return straight to their account before the creator can ever even touch it.
That is incredible. It completely removes the friction and really the trust barrier that usually exists between artists and financiers.
Exactly.
You aren't sitting around for 2 years, sending awkward emails, waiting for a creator to remember to cut you a check.
No, the system enforces the contract automatically.
It is basically institutional-grade compliance wrapped around an independent artistic endeavor.
Exactly. It's brilliant.
Okay, so the investor lane is mathematically locked down. It makes sense. Let's look at the other side of the equation.
The sponsors.
Yeah. If the investors are getting this incredibly safe, first-in-line deal, why on earth would a brand voluntarily give the other $125,000 while sitting entirely outside of that profit waterfall? Like, what are they actually getting? Well, they are getting a return, but they measure their return in cultural relevance and attention, not equity.
Let's look at how they price that attention, because they offer four tiers of sponsorship packages to make up the $125,000 lane.
Right.
At the very top, there is a single title slot for $50,000.
Yeah.
That gives the brand hero on-screen placement, actual integration into the storyline, and a co-presenting credit. Think, you know, Brand X presents EVLVE.
Which is huge exposure.
Right. Then they have two featured slots at $30,000 for multi-scene placements, followed by $10,000 supporting slots, and a few $5,000 premiere-only slots for physical pop-ups at the live launch events.
And notice the types of brands they're going after.
Yeah, they are targeting very specific categories here. Lifestyle, streetwear, and creator tech like cameras and audio hardware.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we really have to look at the massive inefficiency in modern advertising.
Okay, what do you mean?
Major corporate brands usually pay massive, bloated ad agencies millions of dollars to try and manufacture coolness from scratch.
Oh, yeah.
They sit in these sterile boardrooms trying to figure out how to make their new headphones or their winter jacket feel authentic to youth culture.
And it almost always feels forced.
Completely forced.
I mean, to put this in perspective for you, the listener, think about how you experience advertising today.
Right.
It is the difference between being forced to sit through a 30-second pre-roll ad for a camera on YouTube, like an ad you are frantically hovering your mouse over, desperate to skip.
Right. Counting down the second.
Exactly. Versus watching a working creator you actually admire authentically using that exact camera during a pivotal emotional scene in a beautiful film.
The term for this is cultural adjacency.
Cultural adjacency.
EVLVE sits directly at the intersection of music, sports, and creator culture. The brands paying for these slots do not have to invent the cool factor.
Because it's already there.
Right. By funding the sponsor lane, they seamlessly insert their products into an environment that is already saturated with authenticity.
But it's not just a fleeting moment on a screen that disappears when the credits roll either.
No.
The deck places a huge emphasis on what they call owned channel amplification. Explain how this benefits both the brand and the filmmaker.
Okay, so the sponsors get custom, high-quality, behind-the-scenes content of EVLVE actually being made. Yeah, and they take that content and deploy it on their own corporate Instagram or TikTok accounts over a long period.
I see.
They're essentially baking their content creation costs right into the film's production budget, which is highly cost effective for the brand.
Which implies that Prater gets an incredible boost in return.
Absolutely.
If an audio hardware company has 2 million followers and they post a behind the scenes video of EVLVE's sound mixing, they are amplifying the project to millions of people without the filmmaker having to spend a single dime of his own marketing budget.
Exactly. The distribution and the reach are built directly into the funding model itself.
That's so efficient.
It really is. The brands subsidize the creation of the art, and in return, their massive audiences become the engine that drives the streaming and licensing revenue back to the financial investors.
Wow. So what does this all mean?
Right.
When we take a step back and look at the entire EVLVE framework, it is so much more than just a 15-minute film and an album.
Oh, absolutely.
Kyle Prater and his team have engineered a multi-channel financial asset that punches completely out of its weight class.
Yeah.
By perfectly splitting the capital, you know, using non-recoupable brand money to subsidize production while offering highly protected automated profit waterfalls to the financial investors, they've built a $250,000 project designed to act and generate revenue like a million-dollar studio release.
It's incredible.
It mathematically protects the downside for the investor. It delivers deep cultural resonance for the brand. And most importantly, the artist retained their intellectual property and gets to make their art exactly how they envision it.
It is a masterful synthesis of art and capital. But, you know, this raises an important question, one that extends far beyond just Kyle Prater or this specific pitch deck.
What's that?
Well, think about it. If this blueprint works, if mixing a heavily protected investor waterfall with non-recoupable cultural brand capital proves wildly successful, what happens to the traditional gatekeepers?
The studios and the labels.
Exactly. If independent creators realize they can manufacture their own sync-ready ecosystems, utilize digital lockboxes to satisfy venture capital, and leverage brands to cover their pre-production.
Do they ever need them again?
Right. Do they ever need to sign away their life's work to a major Hollywood studio or record label ever again?
That is a massive paradigm shift.
It really is. I mean, EVLVE might not just be the name of this specific project. It might actually be the exact word for what the entire independent financing model is about to do.